Hello! Whoa, came in a little hot. Hello.
Yeah, maybe take it a little easy there, buddy.
We are the Brothers Geek. I'm Patrick Schmaltz with my two brothers. Christopher Schmaltz, hello, Christopher.
Good evening.
And Andrew, hello, Andrew.
Hello.
We're Brothers for Geeks. We talk about geeky things. This is episode number 175. Okay, here we go. Here we go. We're doing 10 weeks of this. Are you guys ready? Are you guys ready for 10?
I'm so ready.
10 one-shots. We are doing...
I'm so excited about this thing we're going to do.
I am very excited.
Podcasting is my life. I love it.
Podcasting is my life. Football is life.
Football is life.
Football is life. So we're talking about House of the Dragon. We are, I am clipping. Fuck, I gotta turn that shit down. Hold on. Let me adjust on the fly here while we're podcasting. That's fun. It's fun times.
This is how we do it.
I gotta turn that shit down a little bit. Coming a little hot. Yeah. Okay, there we go. That's better. Okay, so we are talking House of the Dragon. We are talking about episode one, this episode of House of the Dragon.
We're gonna do ten of these. We're gonna do one a week.
This is a one exactly. This is one a week, the first season of House of the Dragon. This is a series.
This is a series of hot takes. Yes,
I love it. I love this series of hot takes. Oh my god,
takes.
Okay, so the first episode is called "The Heirs of the Dragon."
Yeah.
H-E-I-R-S. Heirs.
Yeah, heirs.
Dragons don't have hairs because they're reptiles. So mammals.
There was one hairy dragon. It was Falcor.
Yeah. From the Neverending Story.
Damon's ass was a hairy
dragon. That was awesome.
Yeah, we got a lot of Damon's ass this episode. Great moment. Okay. So flashback of Harrendahl or what? Harrenhal?
Harrenhal.
Has that place ever not been a fucking ruin? Like, Jesus.
What's the backstory of that place in terms of what ruined, Andrew?
You ready for the three sentence backstory?
Yes. Give me the three sentences.
So, King Harren the Black, who was the king of the Riverlands and the Iron Islands, wanted to build the greatest fortress in Westeros, which he did. It was large enough. Like, it had, it had halls big enough for, like, 1,000 knights. Mm. Like, it was giant. It was the...
Oh, it's coming back to me now. Now that you're saying this, it's coming back to me. Yep.
And he ruled the Riverlands from this fortress for, I don't know how long, but it wasn't long. And then when Aegon, the Conqueror, came to Westeros and his two sisters, Visenya and Rhaenys, riding their dragons... He's like, surrender to me, or I will burn you down. And Harren the Black is like, nah, fuck you, Aegon. I do what I want. I'm the Harren the Black. Guess what?
He burned Harrenhal to the ground. He showed up with the nuke.
Yeah, he showed up with his weapons of mass destruction.
And
they burned a fortress and melted the stone. It was such hot dragon fire. So... Now, but Harrenhal is still like the center. It's like at the kind of the center of the continent. So there's still enough of it standing that people gather there. And Jaehaerys has his great council at Harrenhal because it's this ruined fortress. So it's kind of got this example of my ancestors destroyed this greatest fortress your people ever built. But I'm the king now. So let's try to reconcile a little bit. And decide who's going to inherit the land.
Well, here
Aegon the Conqueror completely destroyed it.
Here's something that is immediately different about this show than Game of Thrones. We get a flashback showing the thing that they're talking about, and then flash forward to what we're dealing with now. Yeah. And Game of Thrones, it took place in one timeline, and then they talked about stuff, and then they had flashbacks when Bran was time traveling, but like we never went back to that, and it never mattered, and nothing, our life is pointless, and everything's a lie. So the flashbacks are different, had a different feel that I liked.
I mean, the world was very familiar,
yes,
which is the first thing that I loved about it. It felt more vibrant to me. It felt like a more vibrant, alive world. The first thing that I noticed in the first couple minutes when you're with young Alicent and young Rhaenyra, and they're like making their way through the Red Keep, it feels like it's much more like full of people.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like a palace with an act like a... like a vibrant kind of active court life. You see, you know, ladies in waiting milling around. You see men on their way to do things. You see.
I don't know any of these characters' names yet. Like, I know Allison because that one I feel like is like sort of a normal, like real world name. It's like sounds like Allison to me.
Yeah.
But like mm-hmm. Rhaenyra, is that the little blonde girl's name?
The young Targaryen who becomes the heir, the daughter of Viserys. Rhaenyra.
And Viserys is the king. Viserys is
Viserys the first.
Viserys. Yes. Viserys.
We're gonna put this link into the show notes. A link to the HBO site that is the House of the Dragon. It has a character guide because I was having the same issue.
Who the hell are all these people?
that's a big issue. Admittedly, it hits you. It drops you into this, and you have to like sink or swim.
Character guide on the HBO site and. It has a picture of the character and what where they fit into the family tree. So go do that.
Since we're talking about houses and new characters and like houses I've never heard before, I'm going to skip ahead to my later. So we have Hightower, Otto Hightower, and he's the Hand of the King, right?
Yeah.
Andrew's our resident Game of Thrones expert. You've actually read Fire and Blood, right?
I have.
So okay, you're gonna help us understand this.
It's been my bedtime book. Like when I need to relax at night, I put that on to like fall asleep to. So I probably listened to it 10 times start to finish, but it's like my fall asleep.
Nice.
The narrator who does the audiobook has a very nice kind of narrative voice. So it lulls me to sleep.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So we have Hightower. I had to like make some connection points in my brain because we only saw Old Town for like one or two episodes in like season 6 or 7 or something. Because like Sam was there.
The very end of season 7 and the beginning of season 8.
That's where the Maester's Citadel
is in Old Town, which is a city that the Hightowers are in charge of.
So it's the university that trains like the scholar class of Westeros is located in Old Town. It's the oldest, and until King's Landing becomes the biggest city. For hundreds of years, Old Town was the biggest city in the entire continent.
And it's also like the center of religion too, right? Is that what I read? I watched a video that was helping me like. So
their analogous faith to Catholicism, the faith of the seven, is centered in Old Town as well. Like the St. Peter's Basilica, essentially, is in Old Town. And the Pope lives there. The High Septon lives there.
In Game of Thrones timeline, we don't see any Hightowers, do we? Is there Hightowers anymore?
That's part of the interesting part of this story is you'll have... 200 years later, in the story that we know, the story that follows Robert's Rebellion and that tells Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen stories, the Hightowers are not a factor at all.
Right, and they're a big family at this time.
They're the most powerful family besides the Valyrians, who are like the richest because of the trade. They are the family that controls the biggest city besides King's Landing.
Okay, so you're bringing up the Valyrians. This is a new house, too, that is not in Game of Thrones. It's the African-American black actor with white dreads, and he's married to old blonde.
Rhaenys
Targaryen, the granddaughter.
And they called her something. What do they call her? The queen that
never was.
Yeah, the queen who never was, which is cool. And they have two children. And I watched a video that was talking about how the two children technically are Targaryen, sort of. So they ride dragons. They have they're dragon riders. The two kids that are shown for like a split second.
For some additional background.
Rhaenys is a dragon rider. Yeah.
She is a dragon rider. She has Caraxes, I think, that she rides. Maybe, or I get them mixed up because there's some similar names.
So the mother rides a dragon, and the two kids that are sitting at the thing are dragon riders.
They will eventually be dragon riders. They're not currently dragon riders in the first episode.
Okay, yeah, you don't see that, but you see them for like a split second, and they never even say anything. But they're let's see. Was there any other houses that you
The three main houses that we need to focus on are the Targaryens. That's the House of the Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
House Velaryon, which is another house that lived in Valyria. So the city, Valyria, the Freehold, the Velaryons were a smaller, less powerful house that left Valyria first. Yeah, they were the first Valyrians to live in Westeros. The Targaryens came later, but they're not
to be confused with Valyrian steel. They're Valyrians.
They're
right?
Valyrians. They're not from Valyria. They're from Valyria. So
fuck you, George R. R. Martin.
keep this in mind. Keep this in mind. The Valyrian family, the House Valyrian, are not dragon riders.
Right.
They do not have the ability to ride dragons.
They're the masters.
They have to intermarry and produce offspring with Targaryens.
Which they've done for a long time.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah.
But they were not dragon lords in Valyria.
Corlys is the master of the sea. He's the naval guy.
Okay, yep. I was thinking of...
If they tell Corlys Velaryon's story well, he will be one of the most interesting characters in the entire series, because he is he's the richest man in the country because he controls so much trade. He has a huge fleet of ships, and he has sailed the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
There's stories told about him where he sailed for decades, and he's seen every part of the world, and he's adventured and fought wars. So he's one of the most storied lords in all of Westeros.
I love that. I think that it's interesting. That just means anybody who survived for that long in this world. So it definitely felt, going back to the feel of it, it definitely was brutal, but it felt less like gotcha. Like Game of Thrones was very much like, oh, I gotcha now. Like I've tricked you. There was very little trickery or like backstabbery in the first episode. I feel like there definitely was like people. Yeah, I bet it's coming, but
There's definitely the palace intrigue, but we can start talking about characters that we love. We talked about Corlys. I mean, we see Otto Hightower, the Hand of the King, in direct opposition to the King's brother, Daemon Targaryen, played by Matt Smith, who. I mean, he's amazing in my mind. Like he is going to be the most complicated, frustrating character of this series.
I'm struggling with him as Daemon Targaryen because all I see is Doctor Who. Sorry,
right? Doctor Who in a wig.
It's kind of true.
I have the benefit of not being a Whovian, so I see Matt Smith playing Daemon Targaryen.
Yeah.
So I knew he was Doctor Who first, but I think the benefit of Matt Smith in this role is that he has carried an entire franchise on his shoulders, and he is, I mean, if not the most, you ask people who's their favorite Doctor, they'll tell you David Tennant, or they'll tell you Matt Smith.
Yeah.
Correct.
So he can carry this character.
Oh yeah,
he's this whole series.
He's going to be incredible to watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so we're talking about like houses and stuff and like the intermingling a little bit and definitely like I wrote down does Matt Smith want to fuck his niece? Is that what happened? Like, I got a weird vibe there. Was that straight up, like, do they like each other? Like, because she didn't seem like she hated him.
She doesn't hate him.
So I think she looks up to him.
Yeah.
She admires,
aren't they gonna be in, like, opposition? Like, they're gonna be...
Well, I don't want to spoil anything.
Right. No spoilers. No spoilers.
I will say this, that... Mm-hmm. From what we know about them right now in the series, Daemon.
Yeah, just from episode one.
Yeah. Just from episode one. We know Daemon Targaryen is adventurous and courageous and bold, and Rhaenyra wants that.
He's not any of those things. Adventurous, courageous.
That's what Rhaenyra. He's a fighter. He rides, he jousts. Rhaenyra sees that. She idolizes him.
He's a dick.
Well,
Rhaenyra, his niece, sees the best in him.
He tripped the fucking horse, dude. He's a scum.
Oh, he's a scumbag. Does Rhaenyra see that? Absolutely
he's
not.
He's courageous. He's brutal.
She sees him that way. That's why she has affection for him. She sees him in that light.
You bring up the jousting scene, and I feel like that had like some weird cuts, like cutaways, and tried to be a little too action movie-y for my taste a little bit. I wanted it to be a little slower. And I'm gonna say this just as like a nerd, that Matt Smith helmet, like you wouldn't want to wear that in a joust. Your face would get obliterated, dude.
It's terrible for jousting, but that armor is badass.
You want your face covered, and you want the little amounts of slits because shards of wood are flying at every collision.
This is like where you're coming from, Patrick, a little nitpicky thing.
Yes.
They never wore, in Game of Thrones, you never saw a hero wearing a helmet during battle. Like during the Battle of the Bastards, Jon Snow never wears a helmet.
Hollywood thing. It's like definitely wear a helmet. Like definitely wear a helmet that covers your face.
I'm just glad that he's wearing a helmet during a fight because of course they would.
Of course they would.
They want to see it's Matt Smith doing the things.
I completely agree. I understand the narrative of it.
Viewers are smart. They know it's Matt Smith in there. It's so stupid.
Yeah, well, put on a fucking helmet that protects your damn face.
It's like the Mandalorian, dude. I mean, it's like you always assume Pedro Pascal is in the armor no matter what's happening. No, he's barely in that armor. He's barely in the Mandalorian armor.
That's just of disbelief. We know that's the character.
I know. I'm just saying. Pedro Pascal is very rarely in the Mandalorian armor.
Don't ruin this for me, Andrew. Don't
ruin That's the correct take. Put a fucking mask on so that covers your face, protects your face.
Let's bring this down. We're all kind of all over the place. I've got notes. Let's just start very simply. What did you guys like most about the episode? Christopher, what did you like most?
I love the world. I love the setup. The dragons look badass.
So much more personality in the way the dragons are designed.
Yeah.
Like, if I had one complaint...
They were unique and different.
Yes. You took my favorite thing is... I'm thinking of the three dragons from Game of Thrones and how they looked very similar, but... were colored differently. These were unique designs. They had different heads. They had different lengths. They had different, like Matt Smith's dragon had a longer neck. He had webbed feet, like very different looking. And that's my favorite part of this is I'm excited to see more dragons. A light spoiler is I read that they did an interview saying in this season you're going to see six of the 10.
Yeah.
So I like there's four more that we're going to see throughout the season. So I'm excited to see the different designs, how big they are compared to each other.
Wait till you guys see Vhagar. Vhagar will blow your minds in terms of.
Yeah, because like the other ones are like, I mean, you don't get two dragons. We don't get the yellow dragon and the red dragon right next to each other in this episode, but we have no idea. They look similar in size, but
Syrax and Caraxes, they're young.
Yeah. So
when we see Vhagar is 300 years old.
That's amazing. Oh my god.
Yeah. 300 years old at this point.
So yeah. What was your favorite thing, Andrew?
My favorite thing, I think I was very impressed with the setting feeling very familiar. King's Landing especially feeling very familiar, but at the same time also having a newer energy to it. Mm. Like this is like you get the sense absolutely that this is a society and a civilization that's at its peak. Compared to Game of Thrones, where the Targaryens had fallen, Robert Baratheon was a totally neglectful king. They were bankrupt. It was kind of like every man for himself. There was no one trying to actually like steer the ship. But Viserys, for all of his faults, is trying to keep the realm together,
mm-hmm.
and is an active force for that. And we find out at the end of this episode why. He inherited the kingdom when it was at its most prosperous, and he's trying to continue that. So you definitely get the sense for me that this is the peak of Targaryen civilization. But it's also got the downside of that, where it's like it's Rome at its most powerful and its most vibrant and its most rich, but also it's very decadent, like the blood sport aspect to it, where they're entertained by men getting killed in front of them for no good reason beyond the fact of the honor of doing fake battle in front of people.
That was another character that was introduced from that scene was, what's his last name? Cole? Is it? He's a...
Sir Criston Cole.
Yeah, and he was from Dorne.
He's from a very minor house in Dorne, but he will play a huge role going forward.
Cool, cool. I like that he beat Matt Smith in a duel. I don't know his name yet. Viserys, I guess. No,
no, that's the other guy. Viserys is the king. He's Daemon.
Daemon, that's right. Demon. I'm gonna remember it now. He's the demon. Yeah. Demon guy who's riding a red dragon. Okay, great.
Yeah.
You know, you're bringing up one more thing that I'm remembering about why I liked it. Slow conversation show about like the intrigue of and politics of a fantasy kingdom. And I liked all, I mean, it definitely had action. It definitely had intrigue, but like it all made sense. It all was like brief, but the majority of the thing was a king talking to his wife in a bathtub about how they've lost their children. And I started to think about like the inbred nature of Targaryen dynasty and how like she lost all these babies and like this was like a struggle and like she's had like 5 babies and only one has survived, like, and this one kills her. And I was like thinking about like medieval times, man, just having a baby that's breech, like you're dead. Like you're dead or the baby's dead. Like it's just so like now modern medicine, thank God, it's like way better off than it was.
I mean, you roll the dice. She says it and it's an on the nose line, but the child birthbed is their battlefield.
Right.
I mean, her duty to the family is to make heirs and she understands that. Yeah. But she's at a point now where it's like, she says to her husband, he's like, I've mourned 6 children. Mm-hmm. I can't do this anymore. This is our last one.
This is, and that's like a conversation too that I found was fascinating was in this kind of show, this kind of time, it's definitely like a wife's job is to have babies. Like little blonde girl doesn't even want to be queen, or she wants to go off on adventures. She wants to be like her uncle. She doesn't want to have the responsibility. She just wants to be in court and do nothing and fuck off all day. So it's like you could do that because she's not going to be king or queen. And now this has been thrust upon her, and this interesting dynamic of like we have the character that was overlooked for being queen, even though she had the best like,
she's the closest. She was the closest.
Closest heir, right? She's a king. Right, but even though she was overlooked because she's a woman, and now we have this different dynamic of a woman is going to be the heir to the throne. And I mean, I was curious about it. Is like, when did I mean? Because you hear about kings a lot in our history, human history, sort of like, is this England has sort of like embraced the queen is the monarchy, that bloodline is in charge. And I was like wondering when that happened, but I started looking stuff up and it's like ancient Egypt had pharaoh queens. And
Russia had czar, you know, women czars. So,
yeah. Right. So it's sort of like they embraced that earlier. And I think it's sort of like this interesting dynamic that they're adding to cause all these problems, right?
Most of the kingdoms in Westeros are patriarchies.
Right.
Women don't even inherit property. They're treated as property. And the only time a woman will inherit a seat of power is if she is the last living relative.
Well, that's why the naming of Rhaenyra is such a big deal.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So that scene too, we saw like a quick glance of a Stark. We saw Baratheon. We saw Valerion swearing his oath of fealty. We saw. Did we see a Lannister in that quick cut? I have to read. No Lannisters at this time, or where are they?
At this point, the Lannisters rule the Rock. They're the Lords of the Rock, but they're more of a minor house at this point. They have not come to power.
Okay.
That you guys will see over the course. If they stick to what the book is, you'll see why the Hightowers and the Valerions are just not involved in Daenerys and Jon Snow and Sansa Stark's story later on. You'll learn what happens to them. It ends up being a story about how the quest for power can destroy everyone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everyone, not just the person who wants to hold on to power, but everyone around them.
It's frankly not, I haven't read the book, but it's easy to predict. Power likes to cling to power.
Yeah.
And when you challenge and you feel it slipping, I mean, it's commentary on what we're dealing with today. Yeah. Power clings to power. Mm-hmm. And in the moments where it's really starting to be threatened, what do people do? They use it to try and wipe out those that are a threat to power.
Yeah.
Straightforward.
A couple of the things that I wanted to touch on. We talked about the dragons having more personality. The actors, I mean, we talked about Matt Smith, how he's great as Daemon Targaryen. The young actress who plays young Rhaenyra, and she'll eventually age up, and
I was curious if we knew when that was going to happen. How much of the story takes place in the past, takes place in the future? Do we know?
The story that's told in the book, Rhaenyra is already an adult. They start the Targaryen Civil War.
Do you think
War
that's it? Are we going to flash forward already?
We'll have to flash forward eventually. I think she's got... I don't know. I'm not going to speculate on that. The actress who played young Rhaenyra, her name is Millie Alcock. Mm. She's fantastic in this episode. I mean, she is great in my mind. And the biggest surprise for me, and because, I mean, these are actors playing parts, the actor who played King Viserys, because in the book, he's barely in the book. He's described as cowardly, a bit weak-willed. He's given no depth whatsoever in the Fire and Blood book. Paddy Constantine and how he plays him, he actually gives him a lot of depth. He gives him a lot of humanity. He loves his wife. He loves his kid. Is he timid? Does he make bad decisions? Sure. Does he have the best intentions in mind? I absolutely think so. Is he responsible for a lot of the downfall that's probably going to happen to his house? probably, and we'll have to see how that plays out. Mm. But the actor who plays him, I was shocked at how much I liked that character just from his performance. Mm-hmm. I thought it was so good.
Well, and speaking of his performance, there's a scene with the two of them at the end in front of the dragon skull. And there he starts to mention that there was like a prophecy about a great winter coming from the north, and then the kingdom needs to be united, and this is like a tale that needs to be told to only the kings and rulers know about this. And I thought that was fascinating. It was sort of like, yeah, we had this premonition, because like Targaryens, they have like prophetic dreams.
Dragon dreams.
It's been a thing among the intense, like, Game of Thrones fandom, as Song of Ice and Fire fandom, as speculating as to, because Martin, in his books and even in interviews, he's never really given us a reason why Aegon wanted to conquer the Seven Kingdoms. The Targaryens had lived on Dragonstone for 100 years before Aegon decided to conquer the Seven Kingdoms. And they never had a strong standing army. They had a few thousand men and allies. They never had a huge fleet. They had 3 dragons. At this time, they had 3 dragons that were ridden by Aegon and his sisters. But it's not like they were a huge, powerful house.
Mm.
So what would motivate Aegon beyond sheer need for conquest? I mean, he could have that.
I was trying to think, Andrew, when was the wall built?
Thousands of years. The last long night happened, if I'm remembering correctly, 8 or 9,000 years before Robert's Rebellion. It stood for thousands and thousands of years.
Mm.
Yeah. The founder of House Stark, Brandon the Builder.
That's right.
Who was the first king in the North. He built the wall with giants and the children of the forest.
And magic. And,
yeah, they imbued it with magic and all that stuff to keep the White Walkers and the others on the other side.
Right.
Yeah, so thousands of years.
Did you notice that he was fiddling with cat's paw while he's having that conversation?
Yeah.
Did you catch that, Patrick?
No. Oh, yeah. Oh, the knife. Oh, yeah, the Valyrian steel blade, the one that stabs the Night King. So,
Arya kills the Night King with it. Yep.
Yep.
That's the dagger.
I didn't remember the name of the dagger. That's all.
This is a real problem for me, though. Okay. I like the lore behind it. It makes some logical sense, but and it feeds the Messiah, we are better than everyone else sort of mindset of the Targaryens.
Yeah.
But the fact that this looming great evil is known only to the line of leaders is outrageous.
Yeah.
Now I can logically piece together this is why they're so arrogant. And they have this messianic sort of quality to them, right? That comes to fruition in Daenerys, right? So
absolutely.
But she was never given this information. And so this information dies as part of this show.
It likely dies with Rhaegar when he's killed by Robert Baratheon.
Right.
Well, and then you're speaking to, like, going back to, like, birth defects and problems with, like, the Targaryens, like, inbreeding, is that also leads to mental problems, which leads to crazy people who are not quite all there. Yeah. So it's like the Mad King sorts of... Yeah. The Mad King sorts of...
But it's good to remember that during this time period, the Night Watch exists. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's not like... And so all of those... All that infrastructure is in place.
Yeah.
In order to protect all the lands to the south of the wall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this idea that the Targaryens have this prophecy that they have as part of their family lore is a fascinating add.
Yes.
To the idea of, because they're the Targaryens in Game of Thrones are kind of one note, not a whole lot of sort of fleshed out. I'm excited about this show because it really is an exploration of the fall mm-hmm. of a family and the all of the elements of that fall and the hubris in the and a real close examination of hubris and messianic tendencies, things. It's really interesting.
Well, and then this doesn't lead to the end of, like, the Mad King gets killed 172 years from now. So it's sort of like the Targaryens continue in some form, but this is like the end of dragons, basically. Everybody should know, like this is like the end of all their nukes are about to get used. And then slowly but surely they dwindle away, and then some dude with a sword can stab the Mad King in the back, and a dragon isn't going to obliterate him. So that's the thing. It's like they stop having as much power, and slowly but surely people stop saying, "Hey, we're not going to listen to you anymore." Because why?
Our city get burned down by a dragon.
Yeah. Right.
Well, it'll be interesting for if they can. It's just pure speculation on where it goes from here. It could be what is the central thing that informs Rhaenyra and her obsession with maintaining her throne. Because mm-hmm. eventually, Viserys is going to die, and Rhaenyra is going to inherit, but. Then there's other factors that try to contest that, and that's when the war really goes crazy.
Don't spoil too much, but like we're sort of like that's where the show's gonna go. Obviously, like this is what they're setting up. He's gonna die, and then there's gonna be a struggle over the three Targaryens that they introduced here. The little girl, the king that never was, and demon Matt Smith.
So it's Rhaenyra. There's going to be Rhaenys is going to play a part.
Right.
Daemon Targaryen is going to play a part. But think about the scene when Otto Hightower sends his beautiful young daughter, Alicent.
Oh, yeah. I thought about that. King. I thought about that, too. What the fuck is that?
Think about what could potentially happen.
He marries her and then gives birth to a Targaryen like that. And then his family is intermingled with the Targaryens. So it's like, are they doing that too? Like I'm curious when they're going to flash forward. I'm curious how they're going to kill the king. Cause they didn't kill the king in this episode. They end with her being like, you're the new heir.
She doesn't.
Matt Smith flies away. So, yeah,
15 years.
Right. I think that's mostly everything I got. I'm trying to see if I missed anything.
Yeah, we'll have lots more dragons coming for us. I think
I'm going to revise my earlier statement. I think my favorite part was the introduction of this lore idea of them being the keepers of this prophecy.
That's pretty cool.
It really adds an interesting flavor to motivations. And I can't wait. I'll be fascinated to see how they... just the intrigue is going to happen and all the moving parts and the variables. That's all cool Game of Thrones stuff. But I love this show is focused on the Targaryens and they're trying to hold power. Why would they want to just hold power just for power's sake? No.
They feel they have a great...
Rhaenyra feels this call now. She knows this secret information.
Yep.
She is highly motivated to be like, okay, I know this. I have to protect people.
Well, and you're, you know, I was worried for a second that, like, there's a common writing trope for characters these days. It's like the unreluctant hero. You know, the reluctant hero, and sort of like I don't want the power, but I sort of like she is never thinking she's gonna have it. Like,
She spends the whole episode bitter and angry at her father because she is not a male.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, why does my father not love me as much as he could? Because the only reason is because I'm not a son. Yeah. And she deals with that bitterness. But she obviously at the end of the episode, hopefully that's a little bit reconciled because she is essentially his only option now. So she has to have this on her shoulders. Maybe, you know, we could even see in the future, we come to realize that Viserys was trying to spare her that. Like, he...
I'll push back on that because I think Viserys' decision is out of emotional impulse.
Yeah.
He didn't think through the, what should I really do? Yeah. He responded to Daemon essentially being a dick.
Yeah.
And also, they, in the show, they don't show Daemon, like, making the speech that Viserys accuses him of. So there is this undercurrent of who is in Viserys' ear.
Yeah.
Who hates Daemon the most? That would be Otto Hightower.
Yeah.
So there is this notion of Viserys is in this weakened state, and the conniver, Hightower, is clearly an operator.
Absolutely.
And so he is clearly trying to influence, and so that could absolutely have been a move by Hightower to whisper in Viserys' ear that Daemon actually said this about your dead son.
Yeah.
He is not worthy, and Viserys, in the emotional state he's in, reacts poorly.
Yeah. I have two more things to mention. The Iron Throne looked different. And he cuts himself on that one scene where he's yelling at him. Fascinating. A lot to think about there. Two, there's some kind of like weird growth on the king's back.
I was going to get to that. So
yeah, okay.
The king that we first encounter in Game of Thrones, Robert Baratheon, I mean, I initially didn't like how they were designing the Iron Throne. I'm like, this is too different. Why would it be so different in Robert Baratheon's reign than in Viserys' reign? Why does it look so different? And I'm doing a little mental gymnastics on it to myself, thinking over the course, the kings may have decided they were going to change what the Iron Throne looked at to make it more comfortable.
Yeah.
Viserys, there's this thing, or they imbue the Iron Throne with certain qualities of, if you're not a good king, the throne will reject you, meaning it will cause you harm. Uh-huh. So the image of Viserys not being a very good king, the throne rejecting him because it injures him so much. Like the sore on his back, it's a wound that won't heal. He might have underlying inbreeding issues.
Good point. I never thought about that. Yeah, yeah.
But like, he sits on the throne and it cuts him all the time because the throne is rejecting him. And that has been a thing in the books that they never touch on.
I didn't think about that. That's fascinating. Yeah.
Well, to give you a little bit of a lore dump. So Aegon the Conqueror had two sons, Aenys and Maegar. Aenys was a terrible king, very weak-willed. Maegar eventually overthrows him, and he's called Maegar the Cruel. Mm. And he is a terrible king because he's the mad king. He has an insane bloodlust, but he is a very focused villain. Like, I hate you, I'm going to kill you. He's very cruel. He's a warrior. He leads his men. Anyway, the myth about how he died is the story that's told is that the Iron Throne actually kills him. He's found on the Iron Throne, stabbed through the chest with swords front, like it goes through his neck. Like he sat down on it wrong or something happened and he's stabbed by a part of the throne. Like it kills him itself. I mean, obviously that can't really happen.
Was the sword that the king was holding, was that a Valyrian steel also?
Like, that is the sword of the king. That is Blackfyre. Sword that Aegon the Conqueror
used. I love all those cool, like, ancient swords that are badass. Like, Daemon has one. Right, yeah, I don't remember.
Matt Smith's character, Daemon, has the sword named Dark Sister that was initially wielded by Aegon's sister-wife, Visenya. She was a warrior.
And I love all these swords that are, like, passed down.
Oh, yeah.
It's very cool.
It is very cool.
Okay, yeah. Any last thoughts? I feel like we've sort of rambled on as long as the episode is, so
I'm very excited for the whole season.
Yeah,
I'll be
watching
it.
We're doing this every week, so tune in to hear our thoughts. Are we doing trivia for this or no?
We're gonna do trivia. The last episode will have a ton of trivia questions about the entire season.
Solid start to the show.
I'm excited.
Very solid start. I'm really excited that Game of Thrones is back, and it seems like it's intelligent again and slow and good. Like
methodical.
You're right. Taking your time. Characters take a long time to move places. No criticism about this season. Yeah. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, brothers_geek @twitter.com. Follow us on Instagram, brothersgeekdostuff, brothersgeek.com, and brothersgeek on YouTube. Now.
Yeah.
And Spotify. Spotify and iTunes.
Apple Music. Yeah.
All right.
Your podcast app.
Apple Podcast.
Thanks, brothers.
Thank you.
Bye.
Fire and blood.